Welcome to this very special edition of TV Campfire Podcast. We got to participate in a conference call with David Greenwalt and Jim Koof, the executive producers and writers of Grimm, which premieres on NBC on October 28th. Sit back and enjoy.
David, can you talk about where the idea for the extended world of the Grimm's fairy tales came from?
Yes, this is originally Jim Kauf and I were approached by Hazy Mills, which is Todd Milner and Sean Hayes' company, and Todd had this great idea about doing the something in the modern world with the Brothers Grimm, and we flipped for the idea, and we came up with the notion that how to marry that mythology into the modern world would be by the following. That the original Brothers Grimm were in fact profilers, and that the stories they were telling were in fact true on some basic deep level. And we came up with the notion that in our world of Grimm, there would only be one world. There wouldn't be a fairy tale world and a real world. And there would just be our world, and in our world live these creatures who can be seen by our hero. And, for example, he can see the big bad wolf and the child molester. And it's a sort of a marriage of a police procedural and a mythological fracturing fairy tales every week. Did I answer it?
And our next question comes from the line of Kaya Sinha-Roy, Rit Reuters. Please go ahead.
So I was wondering, why is now the right time to be bringing this kind of a dark fairy tale out?
Now is a good time because it's always a good time for fairy tales. It's always a good time to be scared on a Friday night a little bit and have a bedtime story that gets under your skin a little bit.
These tales get told every year, all the time, so it's not, it just happened to be the time that they would put one on the air. But they've never gone away.
And particularly the ones that are really iconic have been handed down, you know, the ones that have lasting emotional resonance have been obviously handed down over the years, and we're taking bits and pieces of these fairy tales and using them for our own purposes in the show.
Do you think it's been a bit of a recent kind of rise in the trend, though? You know, we had some movies that reinvented the genre as well.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting that all of a sudden so much of the attention was given to fairy tales. We've been on this one over a year. Yeah. I don't know why it's all of a sudden. I think people are just looking, you know, I guess they're looking at things to remake and books and source material for a lot of different projects, and it just got into that guy. Everybody suddenly started paying attention to the Brothers Grimm.
And our next question comes from one of Chris Dusser with Common Flick Therapy. Please go ahead.
Hey guys, it's actually Chris Duker from ComplexTherapy.com.
Hi.
Good question. Hi, thanks for taking the call. So similar to that of Buffy, X-Files, True Blood, and other TV shows that have run before, and I know it's early, but I wanted to ask a question given where I'm calling from. What are the chances we'll see a comic book series based on this show?
What?
The chances we'll see a comic book series based on the show, I think, are very good, and I think there's a terrific room for that in the comic book world. And the big question is, will it come before or after the musical?
That's great. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
And our next question comes from line of Chuck Barney with Oakland Tribe, Contra Costa Times, and ANG NPRS. Please go ahead.
Hi there. You just talked about how it's always a good time to be scared on a Friday night. You know, I wanted to ask you, get your feelings real quick on kind of the state of horror on TV right now. You know, over the years, we haven't had a lot of scary shows. You know, we've had them here or there, X-Files, Buffy. But now we've got The Walking Dead, American Horror Story. And I just want to see, you know, get your feelings on that. Is it a good time to be writing scary TV, and why?
Well, our ours is not just scary TV because we also have humor in our show. So ours is an odd combination of horror, suspense, classic fairy tale story structure, iconic characters, and humor. So we're trying to hit it all. We just want to be entertaining.
Right. Well, can you talk about, I mean, True Blood has humor too, but.
You know, this is David. I'm not all that familiar with the other shows because I'm working so hard on this show. It has all the elements that, as Jim just said, that, you know, we really like. I think, you know, any time is a good time for a good show. And, you know, people love to be scared, and they love to have a little bit of a laughter while they're being scared, it seems to me. And I just think it's a really good time. You know, the genre has grown, and that's great because it's an opportunity to tell different kinds of stories and more kinds of stories. So for that, I think it's a terrific time to be on the air with this.
And our next question comes from the line of Henry Hanks with CNN.com. Please go ahead.
Hi, guys. Thanks for talking to us today.
Thank you.
So why do you think that the world of fairy tales has endured so long and drives people's imagination so?
Fairy tales appeals to people of all ages, and, you know, and it appeals to people in different ways at a different time. You know, the Big Bad Wolf is a cautionary tale. You don't talk to strangers, go straight to Grandma's house. And
Hansel and Gretel
is,
you know, don't well, that's a cautionary tale for parents who are raising children who don't have enough money to feed them. They're dumping them in the woods, you know. It's a lot of them spoke to the times that the people were living in. And
there's a delight in the fairy tales that appeals, I think, of all ages, you know, because when you're a kid, I mean, Bruno Bettelheim in Uses of Enchantment talks about how important it is for children not to be protected from this information about the world and what the world is really like, but the fairy tales really provide a great way to talk about that kind of stuff, and usually the good triumphs, not always, but usually the good triumphs and the evil is vanquished. So it's great to sort of be read a fairy tale when you're a kid and also to read fairy tales to children when you're older. So there's something about sitting around, you know, the campfire and telling a story. It's an oral tradition that seems, you know, ancient. And it has lasted all this time. We still love these stories.
And it seems to have something of a procedural element to it. But is there also going to be a season-long story arcs or something like that?
Both, actually.
All of the above. There'll be week-to-week episodic tales that you can just enjoy, like opening a book and reading a fairy tale. And there will also be seasonal arcs involved in the show as well.
And like a big bad, or like we're used to with Buffy and Angel?
Well, the big bad comes in a little different form than this in Grimm, because we're presenting some characters that appear to be bad, but may actually have some good agendas. You know, a little more mix of good and bad in the characters that Nick, our main character, will go up against.
Great, thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you.
And our next question is from Jennifer Griffin with Chevron1.com. Please go ahead.
Hi, Jim. Hi, David.
Hello.
Hi. I just wanted to ask you a two-part question for you, if that's okay. I read some information on the creatures in the series having, you know, these royal bloodlines that date back hundreds of years, and I thought that was a pretty cool idea. And I was wondering, will the audience ever get to see, you know, flashbacks or otherwise of the original Grimm brothers?
That's a great question, to which the answer is maybe. We don't. We haven't gotten that far in the mythology yet, of going all the way back. But certainly, these creatures have been around from time immemorial, and there certainly is royalty in our story. today. You know, there are still royals around, but they, like the creatures, live among us and have their own disguises and their own agendas.
Yeah. And just kind of as a second part of that question, I was wondering, do you have like a story Bible written that maps the first season or even beyond?
Yes and no. We have we have a book that's much like the book that's in the show that tells us of our different creatures and some of their different abilities and a lot of history on each of these creatures. Mm-hmm. We're also discovering as we go. You know, we like to be surprised too. So it's not like we know every move on the board, but we kind of know what the board looks like, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, no, it does. Perfect. That's great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And our next question comes from April McIntyre with Monsters and Critics. Please go ahead.
Hey, guys. Thanks for your time.
Hi. Absolutely.
I really do like this series very much so far. I've seen one episode, the premiere, and I was taken with the quality of the look of it, and I appreciate what you've done having all your department heads, your below-the-line people, talk extensively about their craft on the NBC blog. I come from that reporting on the below-the-line craft. And I wanted to ask you, the two of you, specifically the look of it, but it's very saturated. There's a lot of saturation in the colors. There's a very distinct look to Grimm. And I was wondering if you could talk about the lensing, that process, any technical information that you might know from your cinematographer or your camera department. But it has a very lush, densely saturated look.
Part of that's where we where we're shooting, which is Portland. The the look of Portland and the surrounding area is that lush, beautiful landscape. And I think we always wanted to give it a film-like quality, because David and I both come from the film world as well, so we wanted it to look like a movie.
And a bit like a storybook movie, and also we wanted to push, when we're with the so-called Grimm characters or Grimm creatures, we wanted to push the look and have, you know, brighter colors and less subdued hues. And then when we're with the regular, quote-unquote regular normal people, we wanted it to look a little more like real life, but we love that look of the forests with mist in them and the waterfalls and the streams and the rivers and all this great look you get in Portland, as well as the kind of the storybook look of the...
And Clark Mathis was our DP, and he did a fantastic job.
Did a really great job.
Really did. The interior shots, too, are densely saturated. I mean, it's like, I don't know if he's using filters or what, but you know, honestly, it reminded me, the feel of it, of Tales from the Crypt on HBO, as far as that kind of opening a book and hearing a tale, and one that the family can enjoy. And I was wondering if you can give us an indication of what episodes 2 and 3 are going to be like.
Yes, we can give you an indication of episode 2 and 3. One will involve a retelling of Goldilocks and the Three Bears, and one will involve a lot of bees.
Ooh.
Like thousands of bees. Lots of bees.
What tale is that?
We're taking little bits and pieces from a lot of fairy tales, so you may not actually recognize the fairy tale we're drawing from, because some are not that well known. But there's one called The Queen Bee, and it's not, you know, it's not one that everybody can recall immediately, but so we take bits and pieces from a lot of fairy tales and we kind of meld them into real life stories as well.
Ooh. Well, I'm enjoying the series so far. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
And our next question is from Amy and Nancy Harrington with Pop Culture Fashionistas. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you both so much for your time today. We were wondering if you could talk a little bit about the makeup and special effects teams that are on the show.
We have worked sort of long and hard to try to get a look to the show for the makeup and the special effects that is expressing something that's inside the character you're seeing. You know, that's not just somebody in a mask, but that you're seeing the sorrow, the rage,
the emotions manifest themselves in kind of physical characteristics.
That's what I'm trying to
say. So you see the child molester, what we think of the child molester is actually a big bad wolf, and we see that morph out as they become emotionally aroused. So that's how you, our main character, the Grimm, can see these characters beneath the humans.
And the idea is that these creatures, you know, they live among us, but also that these feelings live inside all of us. And the best way to express that is when the quote-unquote creatures look like the actors playing them, not just like some fierce person in a mask.
So we're using a combination of on-set makeup and CGI effects, depending upon what the needs of the scene are. And it's pretty extensive in some scenes. And we have a really good team, from the design concept of the creatures all the way through the delivery of the CGI work at the end.
And do you have one effects supervisor, makeup supervisor for the whole show, or do you rotate between episodes?
We have one supervisor, and he works with many different people who construct the initial designs right through to the people who put the special makeup on the set.
Sorry, just one quick question. What's the supervisor's name?
Edward...
Pronouncing it's a little challenge. Hold on.
If you just hold on a sec, we'll get his last name for you. It's Isadora.
That's okay. We can find it.
Edward Isadora, but I'm not saying his name right.
Oh, that's okay. Excellent. Thank you so much, and good luck with the show.
Thank you very much.
And our next question comes from line of Maria Chulo with Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, guys. Good morning. I think it's morning where you are.
It is. Thank you.
Okay. It seems like in the last 15 or 20 years, it's become very popular to sort of look at the academic side of fantasy and horror. I mean, I know that way back when some people were dissecting Buffy episodes for college credit, but this has really stepped up in the last couple of years. And I'm wondering, you know, when you're crafting a show like this, if you're sort of taking a more academic approach to mythology, or if, as George Romero once said, sometimes a zombie is just a zombie?
Well, we're not thinking in terms of how we're going to teach the series.
No.
We're really just trying to have a lot of fun.
Okay.
And write something that's very entertaining and that people will enjoy and scare and laugh and have a great time. And, you know, good, solid characters that have an emotional core to them.
One of the things that's really fun about genre is how people project onto genre in different ways of what they themselves are feeling, and you never quite know. That's why you never quite know what's going to be successful or not either, depending on how people respond to it. And I remember way back when, you know, after we'd done Buffy for a while, that they were actually having college courses, and Buffy is an iconic female character, and you know, that was great. It was a little surprising, and it was great. But you can't, I don't think you can really take an academic approach to this kind of work. I think you have to say, what's really scary, what's really fun, what's a little different maybe that I haven't seen before. And people definitely get a lot of power from genre because they can project themselves onto the characters because they're distanced from the characters. It's kind of a strange paradox, and one that's really powerful.
Okay, cool. Thanks.
Thank you.
And our next question is from Kyle Nolan with NoReruns.net. Please go ahead.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking our call.
Thank you.
So is your plan to have every episode have some basis in an existing fairy tale, or are you also going to be inventing your own brand new fairy tales?
All of the above.
All of the above. Some will be really clear, like, oh, that's Little Red Riding Hood or Oh, That's Goldilocks and the Three Bears or Sleeping Beauty or whatever. And then some will be less clear of what the specific fairy tale will be, but there will always be an element of some fairy tale in the shows.
Or we'll take a story from the headlines and give it a fairy tale like twist to it, so you go, oh, the real life story has a fairy tale quality to it.
Yeah, and as a follow up question, there'll be two fairy tale shows starting up this fall, as well as you guys are scheduled up against two other established genre shows. What is it about Grimm that you feel is different that's going to set it apart and attract all the viewers?
I think Grimm has the power of the genre shows, but it's also got the power of the procedural shows and the idea of one complete episode every week so that you don't need a scorecard to watch the show. You know, you get a complete story every week, although there will be some mythology, but it'll be doled out slowly enough that you don't have to see absolutely every episode to know absolutely everything that's going on with the show.
Yeah, also, our show is based in our world. So we're just explaining a lot of bad behavior with fairy tale reasons.
Great.
Can't wait to see more.
Thanks. Thank you.
And our next question comes from the line of Cody Keplinger with Poptimal.
Please go ahead.
Hey, guys.
Hi.
Wow. I am a huge fan, have been back since Buffy and Angel, and that's actually the source of my first question. David, you worked on Buffy and Angel. Jim, you worked on Angel and Ghost Whisperer. What draws you to supernatural television?
You know, we're just drawn by the stories. We've written, because we started our careers together, you know, way back when doing Class, American Dreamer, Secret Admirer, and stuff like that as features. And we're always just drawn to the story, whether it's a genre or not. You know, genre is just, the rules change a little bit. But you're still trying to tell emotional stories with real people in them. It's just, you get to have creatures as opposed to not.
Yeah, and the fun of Grimm is, you know, what happens to this young man who's a robbery homicide detective who suddenly starts, quote-unquote, seeing things and at first thinks he's losing his mind, you know, and he's seeing these critters or creatures within, quote-unquote, normal human beings. And that idea really grabbed us, like what a great way to tell stories and what a great way to explain some pretty heinous things that go on in the world that seem inexplicable. You know, but if you put this lens of the Brothers Grimm on it, and put this lens of the fairy tale element onto the police procedural, you get this kind of new view of things. So we found that very exciting.
Yeah. So every crime has two reasons. It has a Grimm reason and what appears to be the real reason.
Awesome. Okay. And then quick follow up question. You guys said that some of your fairy tales will be the lesser known. That really appeals to me as a big Brothers Grimm fan myself. Do you guys have any particular favorites from the Book of Grimm stories?
Well, yeah, I mean, Hansel and Gretel and
Little Red Riding Hood and the usual suspects. And then there's some that are just so bizarre, they almost don't make stories. Like there's one called The Land of Schlaueroffen. But the things that go on in the Land of Schlaueroffen are interesting and funny and kind of crazy.
And we're not just drawing from the Brothers Grimm. We're saying that the Brothers Grimm were the profilers in their particular area in Germany at their time. But we're also saying anybody who told fairy tales had that same ability. So we're going to expand our world here by drawing from whatever fairy tales we can find from all over the place.
Great. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you.
And our next question comes from the line of Emily Gagne with TV Guide Canada. Please go ahead.
Hey, guys.
Hi.
I just kind of wanted to know why you picked Little Red to kick off the series.
Well, we threw around a lot of different ideas, and that one was such an iconic story that we thought we could really have fun retelling it in this modern context.
Plus, it has such a great natural beginning of, you know, I mean, Little Red Riding Hood is skipping through the woods, and in our case, you know, a college student, obviously wearing a red hoodie, is jogging through the woods. and it's just taken by this creature really suddenly, and we liked working backwards from that.
Okay, and like as we said, just we're talking about actually, you guys have worked on Buffy, Angel, Ghost Whisperer. Is there anything particularly from those shows that you've worked on before that you wanted to bring to Grimm?
Well, just the power of genre, you know, that people will project themselves onto the characters, and in Grimm, what's kind of great about Grimm is there's something familiar to the tales of Grimm, if you will, and something that we all can recognize from either when we were kids or reading to our own kids. So it just seemed like a very special idea to mix that with a police procedural. You know, it seemed like that would be a good casserole.
Mm-hmm. And just quickly, obviously it's a darker show. How dark are you guys going to go? Are you going to keep it more of a family-friendly sort of?
Well, it's family-friendly if you like to be scared a little bit in your family. And, you know, it's dark. I mean, the actual tales themselves are really gruesome, and we're not going quite that gruesome as the original tales are. But it is definitely, you know, it's definitely showing a dark underbelly of life, you know, leavened with humor and action.
Okay, awesome. Thank you so much, guys.
Thank you.
And our next question comes from line of David Eckstein with Zaptuit. Please go ahead.
Hi guys, how you doing?
Good, how are you?
Good. So, you know, I have a couple of questions. One is, how will Nick be able to convince those who can't see this other world that it really exists and he's not completely nuts?
Well, I haven't written that scene yet.
That's true, we haven't written that scene yet. This is the crux of the series, that he is in a world where almost no one else knows about it, but there are characters, and there's a character in the pilot who is from that other world.
Right.
And that character is trying to, you know, control his own impulses and to become a better human. And so he does have somebody he can...
Confidant.
He has a confidant that he can talk to. But that's his problem, because he would appear to be crazy and would be locked up, and may indeed be locked up at some point, you know, as we continue on in the series with this stuff. But it's a very hard thing to convince someone of if they can't see what you're seeing.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good problem to have.
Right, and that factors into his relationship both professionally and personally, is that...
Oh, yeah.
Exactly.
It gets more complicated as the series goes along.
So I can be clear, this was something, you know, I've seen the pilot. This is something that for the first time emerges during the pilot. Is that correct? Does he have moments, and like, will it be a flashback where he has little blips of it in his past or anything like that?
Well, he certainly was a profiler and in a sense could see things that other people couldn't see, you know. But the basic emergence of it is in the pilot.
Okay. And
he may have seen under his bed as a child, you know. We may go way back there, but for the current telling, the great emergence is what's happened to him in the first episode.
Okay, and you know, you guys, one other, just you guys got picked up for what, 13, or how many did you shoot?
That's correct. The pilot plus 12.
Okay, gotcha. Okay, I think I'm good. Thanks so much. Good luck with the show.
Thank you very much.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye.
And our next question comes from line of Sean Manning with Comic Book Resources. Please go ahead.
Hi, guys.
Hello.
So you've touched on this a bit, but noticing, you know, the detective Nick Burkhardt seems to occupy these two worlds, and it strikes me that the series itself is doing the same thing, balancing between police procedural and, you know, this more fantasy element. I guess how are you planning to balance those two elements against each other, and, you know, maybe draw in viewers who may not ordinarily watch one or the other?
Well, if for example, you're someone who really likes the police procedural, you know, there will be familiar elements in the show that will appeal to that viewer who is like, here's a crime, what's the source, who really committed the crime, what's the source, what's the cause, and what's the solution, how do our heroes solve it? At the same time, there's a whole other level, you know, sort of cooking at the same time on the stove that usually has its own explanation in the grim world of who these creatures really are and what they're really up to. And our hero is astride the two worlds. He's got a foot in each world. And he, and you know, it's very difficult for him to balance, you know, what is he going to tell his girlfriend? What is he going to tell his detective partner? How is he going to use these abilities to solve crimes and yet still have it look like they could have been solved in the normal world? So I think it's appealing to, you know, hopefully a broad audience that maybe normally wouldn't be that much interested in one or the other, or that are that interested in one or the other, but want to, you know, more meat in the sandwich, so to speak.
Thanks.
Okay. And our next question comes from the line of Kristen Clark with PopCultureMadness.com. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks so much for talking to us today.
Hi.
I know it was mentioned earlier that we're seeing, you know, so many of these popular shows based on a lot of these fantasy and supernatural elements. I'm wondering if you, you know, why you feel we as viewers, you know, have such a curiosity about, you know, things unknown and the fantasy aspects.
I think it's really hard to explain what the heck is going on in the world, and the idea that there's actually creatures living among us who express the very strange emotions and impulses that we all have inside us, to actually make that anthropomorphic in a way adds to the enjoyment of watching a story where you want to be entertained, but you kind of want to learn a little something too, and you want to be, you know, scared, entertained, made to laugh a little bit. So I think that the power of these age-old tales is kind of endless.
And, you know, can you talk about the actual production of the show? How has the chemistry on set been between the cast members?
We've been incredibly fortunate. Everybody
likes everybody.
Yeah, it's we're
very fortunate.
Everybody's happy to be there, grateful to be there, and the fun of shooting in Portland, and Portland's like another character to the show. And you know, it's good to have everyone in one place that maybe is outside of Hollywood. It doesn't look like a show that could be shot anywhere else, certainly not in L.A. or New York, that you couldn't shoot this show. So it has its own little clubhouse kind of feeling. And the actors have been tremendous, just really terrific.
Great. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
And our next question comes from line of Heather Galley with Spoiler TV. Please go ahead.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
Hi. My question is, viewers of genre shows tend to be pretty hardcore and intense, and I'm one, so I know this for a fact. And we tend to think too deeply sometimes. And I guess my question is, with this show, are we to assume, and this goes along the lines of thinking probably too deeply about this, are we to assume that these characters, for example, the Big Bad Wolf, things like that, are archetypes of the, you know, just in general, or are they, like, for example, is there more than one Big Bad Wolf? Do Big Bad Wolves always go after, you know, girls in red hoods? I mean, are these kind of symbolic? Are they, you know what I'm trying to say here?
Yeah, I think it's a great question.
Well, they're actually real people with real problems, and we actually, in the show, are telling their point of view as well. So you hear from the Big Bad Wolf, and there's many of them. We call them Blutbods, and they're Blutbodden in the plural. And they have a point of view of what they're doing, and their behavior from their point of view is not all that bad. They accept it as normal.
And our one Big Bad Wolf running character, a regular in the show, is a vegetarian, and he does Pilates, and he goes to church, and he's trying to fight his grimmer impulses. So they run the whole gamut, the whole spectrum, so that they're not always evil or bad. Sometimes they're good, sometimes they're innocent, but they've gotten themselves into a situation in which our hero has to help them. So they kind of run the gamut that humans do. And each one is different. They're not all the same. They can't just be categorized as generically the same.
That's fascinating. Thank you. I was really thinking about that. it was bothering me, so thank you for clearing that up.
One more thing. These creatures, yes. When they were little, their parents told them stories about the Brothers Grimm and to be afraid of the Brothers Grimm. So these creatures, when they recognize our character as a grim profiler hunter of these creatures, some of them get very frightened because they've been told these
will slay them.
Yeah, that they'll slay them. So there's many points of view in the show.
That's awesome. That leads me to then my next question, which is, aside from, I know that there will be that character that you mentioned who's going to be a regular, one of the Big Bad Wolves. Will there be other kind of reoccurring or regular characters from the Grimm world that we're going to get to know?
Absolutely.
Yeah, there are. Some of them won't be in every episode, but there will be arcs for them, and we'll build on their characters a little bit here and there.
There'll be some that are as simple as the refrigerator repairman who comes to your house, you know. So, like I said, they come from all walks of life.
That's great. I'm really looking forward to this. You're welcome, and I appreciate you taking the time to talk to us. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And our next question comes from line of Paul Arca with ShakeFire.com. Please go ahead.
Hey, guys. I saw the pilot, and the show looks great. My question is, if you could get anybody on the show to guest star, who would you have, and what parts would you give them?
Oh, that's a good question. Well, Ernest Borgnine
is Marlon Brando.
Hey, Marlon Brando. anybody who wants to play with us, really, you know, would be, you know, and certainly some people from my own past on Buffy and Angel. I'd love to see some people from there, and. Just about anybody. I start naming names, then it's like I'm picking favorites. And
we're just trying to write great roles that will attract, you know, strong actors.
Okay. And I have one more question. What obstacles have you had to deal with in producing the show?
The biggest challenge is creating the creatures and getting everything done on time, because that's a huge challenge for the production team. We can easily write them, but it's hard to design them, get the masks made while the casting is going on, and then, you know, get all that done in the time frame of a television production.
They're big shows with action and adventure in them, and they're a challenge to get them done, as Jim just said, under a normal television production time.
And Steve Oster, who is in charge of our production in Portland, is doing an incredible job keeping everything on track.
We know that because we don't hear from him that often. So we're very happy about that.
Okay, thanks a lot, you guys, and I can't wait to see the rest of the season.
Thank you.
And our next question comes from one of Aaron Willard with Sci-Fi Mafia. Please go ahead.
Hi, gentlemen. Thanks so much for being on the call today.
Thank you.
I saw that pilot and I really enjoyed it. It was a terrific setup, and I'm really looking forward to seeing more. seeing more. But my husband also really enjoyed it too, which doesn't always happen. So well done. it feels a little more accessible than some of the other current fantasy horror shows like Tuba or, you know, American Horror Story. Scary, but not as scary. And I really love the humor. I'm curious, were you asked to tone down the violence and put in more comedy, or is it pretty much the balance that you went in with originally?
That's
kind of
us.
Yeah, that's kind of our approach to stuff. You know, when we're writing a really serious scene, we start chuckling about things, and when we're writing a less serious scene, we see things that are darker. And that balance was really struck from our original outline and our original script that we wrote for NBC.
And the ability to tell the stories from the Grimm point of, the Grimm character's point of view opens up so much for the show, because it allows us to, you know, explore feelings and reasons and all those fun things that most shows don't do.
And our villains usually have a good reason for what they're doing. It may be very sick and crazy in our world, but in their world it may be as simple as just getting a meal.
Sure. And along those lines, actually, I was going to ask, is there going to be an attempt to reform other creatures, like Monroe is already reformed, or is that rarely going to be an option?
Well, not all creatures are bad to begin with.
No, right. Some of them are good, and they run the gamut just like you and I and the people in the world of good, bad, and indifferent. So Monroe has had to fight his nature because he's a Blute Bat, and because of the Blute Bat family he comes from. But not everybody is out there doing dastardly things. Most of them are just trying to pay the rent and get on with their lives.
And I love that aspect of it. It's a really nice twist. Are the two of you the only two writers in the writer's room, or are there more?
The two of us are the only... Well, we have a staff. We have a staff of 8 other writers. And
okay.
We're all working together to bring the show to fruition.
Anybody that has similar genre experience like you two have?
Well, there's some people from CSI, Sarah Goldfinger and Noreen Shankar, and there's Dan Fessman and Al DiFiore from both sort of humorous things and procedural things. And
nobody's got the genre experience that we have.
We just wanted people who could write, you know, quote unquote good stories, and we're kind of filling in the blanks.
Perfect. Well, you're absolutely perfectly qualified for that. So
thanks,
and I'm really looking forward to seeing the rest of the series.
Thank you.
And our next question comes from Anna Stefan Blitz with ForcesOfGeek.com. Please go ahead.
Hey guys, how are you today?
We're doing good. How are you?
Very well. I love the pilot. What are the challenges and joys of creating a series mythology based on essentially a fairy tale mythology?
Well, the joy is that there's something familiar in it, and there's something universal in it.
And again, part of the fun of that is telling it from the Grimm character's point of view, because the Grimm fairy tales don't really give us the Big Bad Wolf's point of view.
And the challenges are what is happening in each episode that is a crime that could occur in our real world, and it also has some kind of grim meaning to it that they do in their world. And that's a challenge because you have to have a couple of stories for every story.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned that Bruno Bettelheim's use of enchantment. What other academic resources, if any, have you guys referenced and kind of, you know, did you go to this purely as a let's go to the source material, or let's read, you know, what other people think of fairy tales before we delve into this?
Well, I could tell you the tremendous amount of books that we've read and have on our shelves, but that would be showing off. And mostly we come at it from the inside of the stories. You know, we either find a crime that we think could be turned into a fractured fairy tale or vice versa. And we actually try to tell it from inside the stories as opposed to understanding highfalutin academic things from outside the stories, because that doesn't really help us with the essential cores of the stories.
Well, we see, like, for instance, if you take a source material of a Grimm story, could some of these things be seen as like repeating, the three bears you mentioned, because it's happened in the past, can we assume?
I'm sorry, say that again.
Because if you take a story like, say, the Three Bears or any Grimm story, can we occasionally see these as like equivalent of a serial killer? like these things have happened before, and they're repeating patterns. Okay.
Yeah, you can see that.
Yeah, but they all take place in the here and now, and families who've dealt with this stuff. Sometimes, you know, you have a third generation bear or wolf or something that's been civilized, you know, but there may still be elements in that person's family of wanting to go out and hunt. And that's a, you know, can be a conflict within the family, just like in America, how immigrants come here and try to become American, but they still have their past.
Do the grim fairy tales as such exist in the world of the show? Like, for instance, do people think of them as fiction? Or is it completely just kind of absorbed into the reality of the series?
I don't think the characters, when they're going, solving their crimes, reference the grim fairy tales when they're solving the crimes, because it's an actual crime for them to deal with, so they're not... I'm not going, you know, gee, this is just like
Goldilocks
and the Three Bears.
Well, sure, but for instance, him knowing that he's a Grimm, is he aware of the, like, there's a book of Grimm, you know, the Grimm fairy tales were existed, or...
Yeah, we've created the Grimm books that he has are the original stories that were handed down from the Grimm brothers and passed on and added to by generations of Grimms, so they're more like profiles. Of criminal behavior and creatures. So that's what he's got. He's got ancient books to reference.
So that's the real source material, but your question, yes, the Grimm fairy tales, that book exists in the world of our show. That could be on a shelf somewhere. But what he's using is very specific profiling source material that's been handed down to him through his family.
Right. Well, it was a fantastic pilot, and I can't wait to see the rest of the season. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
And our next question comes from line of Livia Alamine with Weedon Office. Please go ahead.
Hi, guys.
Hi, Weedonopolis, huh?
Yeah, exactly. I'm really excited about a new show that we can report on.
One of our favorites.
Didn't you send us some little creature heads?
Yeah, we got creature heads for you guys.
My question is actually character based. I'm really interested in the Monroe character because for me he has the potential to be probably the most interesting character because he's straddling the line between good and evil. And I guess what can you tell me about his character and the arc you have planned for him this season?
Well, you're talking about a very interesting character who is he comes from a family of quote unquote big bad wolves, but as he says himself, he's not that big and he's not that bad anymore. And in a way, his character is the most human of any of the characters because he's the one most battling his instincts. And he might have an instinct to go after a little girl in a red hoodie, but he's learned to not do that. And he's learned, and like I say, he's a vegetarian, and he you know, goes to Pilates classes. He takes certain you know, antidepressant drugs to help keep him in shape. And he's going to go through all kinds of things in this season, not just one big overarching arc, but he is helping a Grimm, which is going to create a lot of trouble for him.
Because he becomes the one confidant that Nick has, and he's reluctant at first to help, but as the requirements of the cases get more complex, Nick has to rely on him repeatedly, and that will cause Monroe some personal suffering in the near future, which he'll have to come to terms with as well.
Oh, okay, that sounds great, because, I mean, I'd say that's the character that I'm most excited to see where that goes. You also mentioned, somebody asked...
You'll have a lot of fun.
You mentioned earlier that you're not sure, you know, not early enough to say whether or not you're going to have flashbacks to the actual Brothers Grimm. But in the teasers, they've said things like he's one of the last Grimms, which to me means that there are others. So, of course, my brain is now thinking, all right, let's see a third cousin or something. So have you guys kind of thought about that, like a Grimm in present day that's not, I guess, the main character?
Oh, yes.
There's certainly other Grimms out there. He's just not in contact with any of them, nor has his aunt been in contact with any of them.
Because there's an organization that is out to kill Grimms.
Oh.
So kind of they're down underground.
It's a little dangerous to gather in public.
Oh, okay. I didn't know. That's great to know. So one other thing is I'm a big Supernatural fan. So for me, when I see the trailers for Grimm, I'm automatically thinking Supernatural. What can you tell the fans out there that separates it from that kind of story?
Well, we're not really Supernatural, where I know the show, but I don't know well enough to really comment completely on that.
We don't have quote unquote supernatural creatures. We have critters who live within humans that are like you and me and can be seen by Grimms.
They're living their everyday lives like we are. They have their reasons for doing things.
But there's nobody who's immortal. There's nobody who can't be killed. And as the hero says in the pilot, he says to the Big Bad Wolf character, he says, "Am I going to need silver bullets?" And the guy says, "What are you, an idiot?" So we're probably a little more grounded in some version of reality, albeit a skewed one.
All right. Thank you guys very much. I appreciate it.
Sure.
Thank you.
And our next question comes from line of Janice Kay with sciencefiction.com. Please go ahead.
Hi, gentlemen. Thank you so much for this opportunity. I know we've been talking a lot about the Grimm fairy tales, but is there a chance that we may see fairy tales from, like, Hans Christian Andersen or even the original versions of how Cinderella is actually pretty gruesome, not the Cinderella that we know from Disney?
Yes, we're saying that the Grimms were the profile in their territory at their particular time, but anybody who told fairy tales actually had the ability to see these characters, so they're kind of related to the Grimms. But we will draw on fairy tales from all over the world.
Oh, great, because it was really interesting. I actually did take a fairy tale class in college, and we grew up
with
Glass Slipper. Pardon me?
Go ahead, we're just teasing. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah, I was one of those who took it in college. And I was very interested in seeing how Cinderella was actually more gruesome, where the sister cut off her toe to fit into the shoe.
Yeah.
So, no.
And the stepsisters had their eyes pecked out.
Yes.
And in fact, we have a character who gets his eyes pecked out. We nod to that. And at some point we'll do a Cinderella, some kind of a retelling of the Cinderella for sure, with the way you've never seen it before.
Oh, that's awesome. It's really exciting.
Great.
Thank you.
And our next question comes from the line of Pia Sinaloy with Reuters. Please go ahead.
Hi, guys. It's me again. I just wanted to ask, I guess, what the biggest challenges have been for you in putting this together, whether it was in the creative process or just making it happen. What challenges did you come across?
Well, like we said, you know, doing these shows that are big with a lot of special effects and special makeup, you know, is a challenge. That's a big challenge. And coming up with stories that resonate in the two worlds, I think, is the biggest challenge. Good, simple stories that have some fairy tale element to them, an element that can take place in the real world as we know it now, in modern day world. And
it's really challenging to just come up with a good story.
But it's fun too, you know. There's not that much heavy lifting. We're pretty lucky.
Have you sort of had any sort of thematic challenges at all? I mean, I know we've been talking a lot about the genre and, you know, just making it adaptable, but are there anything that caused you particular kind of trouble at all when it came to the themes that you were exploring, especially since this is going to be on NBC as well?
Well, NBC's been terrific. We've just been turning in stories and getting a few notes, and we seem to be on the same page there. And
You know, there are interesting themes present themselves in these stories. In the second episode, you know, we see a family that's living a quote-unquote normal life, but the kids want to go back to the old-fashioned ways, and in fact to an old-fashioned kind of hunt. And, you know, it's how much do the parents know about this, and how do you raise your kids? There's all kinds of interesting themes, and which are exaggerated because, of course, these kids want to hunt something to the death, you know. So you take a normal coming-of-age story and exaggerate it.
Now, of course, a lot of the Grimm fairy tales, you know, they're based around morals. You know, the fables always have a moralistic message. Is that like a kind of key focus to the new series, or is that something you just are fading into the background and focusing more on the story, on the fairy tale itself?
Sometimes it's a very clear moral lesson, and sometimes it's a little more obscure. You know, it depends on the specific story. It's, you know, generally the evil are vanquished, but not always.
Sure. Thank you so much. I really enjoyed the first show.
Thank you.
And the last question comes from one of Tony Toledo with Sci-Fi Talk. Please go ahead.
Hello.
Hi, gentlemen. How are you? Good morning. Can you talk about the casting process and finding the people on your show? Like for David and Russell, were they people you had in mind, or all the cast came through the casting process?
The only one that we had in mind was Silas Weir Mitchell, who plays Monroe.
Because Jim had worked with him before, and from the beginning was saying, you got to see this guy for this part. And when we saw him, it was like, oh, yeah, who else could possibly do this part but Silas Weir Mitchell?
Yeah.
And David Gentile came through the casting process, as did Russell Hornsby, but it was clear when those guys, you know, came into the room and read that there's something very special about these two. And then there was something very special about those two together. We really saw them as partners. And Russell has a lot of depth and a lot of strength and power to what he does. And David is terrific. He's got charm. He suffers well, which is always the thing you look for in these young stars. And
with good supporting cast with Missy Tulloch and Thatcher Lees and Reggie.
Thatcher Royce and Reggie Lee. We actually created a part for Reggie Lee. We liked him so much that we created a part for him, Sergeant Wu, in the series.
Well, kudos to you guys for using Kate Burton as the aunt. I think she just, you can see that they have a very warm relationship, and it really helps to sell the idea of the Grimms, the scene they had together that I saw. It was really moving.
Oh, well, wait till you see the second one.
Yeah, wait till you see the second one with her.
Yeah, and Monroe does look like a fun character. You spoke of the humor. I think already we've seen that he's going to supply quite a bit of it from what we've seen so far.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Thank you, gentlemen. Really appreciate your time.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening, and if you have any questions, comments, remember you can send feedback to tvcampfire@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter, we're on Facebook, and listen to us on getthepointradio.com and Krypton Radio. Talk to you guys next week.